It's 8 minutes past 11. Time now for an extended interview, which we will run over the next 40 minutes or so with the broadcaster Noel Edmonds. He's known to millions around the UK, of course, for his work in broadcasting over a 50-year career. Whether it's Deal or No Deal, Noel's House Party, Top of the Pops or Swap Shop, chances are you will have watched the show with him at some point. And, of course, he hosted the Radio 1 breakfast show for many years. But when he lost his business, the Unique Group, to HBOS fraudsters in 2005, it went to a very dark place for him. He is still fighting to recover the money he lost from a crime which saw five staff jailed last year. HBOS is now owned by Lloyds Banking Group, who Noel is now pursuing for compensation. I've been speaking to Noel Edmonds tonight. Well, Noel Edmonds is with us now. Good evening to you, Noel.
And a very good evening to you.
Why, my goodness, I'm sitting here. This is a wee bit, I guess, scary for me, because I've been watching you from early childhood, and you're a big part of many people's lives, aren't
Stephen,
you?
Stephen, you managed to make that sound very sinister.
It's not. Wow. How many years are you in the business?
In September of this year, I celebrate half a century, 50 years in radio and television, because, as you know, I started in radio, and in many respects, radio is still my first love.
And it's been a roller coaster, right? Did you ever think you would last this long? Were you always very confident?
No, of course not. And when you're involved in this business, people very kindly every now and again say, wow, what a successful career. But of course, when it's you, it was just a succession of jobs. And when I look back to my Radio 1 days, I never had a contract longer than 13 weeks. You never knew when you're going to be bumped off. And the world of television was, particularly Saturday nights, was super competitive. So I've been very fortunate. I look around and I think, oh, where's everybody gone? Where are all those people I used to be working with? Where are they now?
Does it screw you up slightly that you're on? So all my friends are, whatever they are, dentists and doctors and bank managers and
oh,
all
my
that
word,
kind of
you move in exalted
right?
circles.
And I kind of, when I look at what I've done in the living, which is going to a similar business to you at a lower level, I think to myself, why didn't I go for something more secure? And then I might be a little bit more sane. Do you know what I mean?
I cannot think of anything to commend sanity. And I can think that maybe regular financial employment, you know, is a good idea. But I've been very fortunate that almost everything I've done, I've loved. And I've found that by loving what I do, I actually became more successful and was very well rewarded. And, you know, life has no securities whatsoever. And so following the professions never appealed to me. And let me be honest, that when I was growing up in Essex in the 1960s, my parents, who were both teachers, my father was a careers master, tried to encourage me to go into the professions. And I'm so glad I didn't, because I've had the most wonderful series of jobs over 50 years.
You mentioned Saturday Night TV, Noel, and how competitive that is. Do you handle pressure well? What was it like being box office Saturday night TV, but once one show's over, you've got to make the next show box office too?
Well, I was incredibly fortunate to be working for BBC television in what could arguably be called the golden age of television, with some incredible people at Television Centre, led by charismatic individuals like Bill Cotton and Jim Moyer and various other executives. It was a totally different era, and so it was a different BBC, but I was in no doubt why I was hired to do first the Late Late Breakfast Show, then Noel's Roadshow, and then, of course, Noel's House Party. I was hired to be ITV. It was as simple as that. And on Saturday nights in the 90s, I and Cilla Black would slog it out over a combined audience of over 30 million.
It's incredible, isn't it?
It is. And then on Monday morning, you would wait for the overnights, the figures to come in, and we would have got 15.4 and ITV will have got a 15.3 and we'd think great, and then some weeks they won. And I knew that as long as I kept delivering for the BBC that things would be okay. But of course it was a period of huge change towards the end of the 90s, and change which we now see the results of that change today.
It was your company making the show, wasn't it?
It was my company that owned the format and owned elements of the show.
Mr. Blobby.
Yes, but it was made by the BBC, and we had a very good commercial arrangement. We made a lot of money for BBC Enterprises, as it was then, and elements of the show were sold around the world. And Mr. B was hugely successful with his number one record, and that really pissed off Gary Barlow, I tell you. It's impossible, Stephen, for me to exaggerate my happiness at having been able to make that kind of television, and my gratitude to the BBC for a 30-year career.
Was Blobby one of the best money spinners you've ever done?
No. The best money spinner I've ever done was Noel Edmonds.
Well, that's interesting when you talk about yourself in the third person.
Noel Edmonds is a brand. It's very, very difficult, actually, in all seriousness, said he, laughing. When you've been in the public eye since the age of 18, it's very difficult to assess yourself. But I can remember being ridiculed when I did some interviews, probably in the late 80s, early 90s, where I talked about the viewers and listeners as consumers. And I talked about people like Michael Aspel and Alan Wicker and lovely Terry Wogan as brands. And Noel Edmonds is a brand. But that, of course, came to be. It came to be the industry norm. And we become part of the consumer landscape. And so I've been very protective of the Noel Edmonds brand, and I've tried very hard not to do things that would leave people thinking, oh, hang on, that's a bit odd. What's Noel Edmonds doing that for? However, I'm saying that, and 7 days' time, I'm filming for BBC Two in Southeast Asia, driving a classic rally car through Thailand, Cambodia, brilliant, Laos and Vietnam. I mean, what on earth is Noel Edmonds doing?
So this is going to sound like a snide question, and it's not. It's
feel free. Come on.
Yeah, but it's genuinely not. When you consider, we're all human beings, when you consider yourself as a brand, and then you have a lot of success, so therefore you're powerful, who's keeping your feet on the ground?
Your real friends and your real life.
And do you think you did that, or did you
become... I'm sure I've made all the mistakes. Stephen, I mean, for goodness sake, we all make mistakes.
What was your biggest one?
I don't think I can answer that question, because I'm aware of things that I would have liked to have done differently. The tragedy on the Late Late Breakfast Show was a massive, massive, what can one call it? Well, yeah. Tragedy.
When someone died?
Yes, Michael Lush. And I think about that a lot still to this day. And the upside of it, if there is one, is that health and safety in our industry was improved from that moment onwards. But that was beyond comprehension. I mean, the BBC reeled because of that. We were all rocked in the industry that somebody could lose their life on a light entertainment show. And you never forget that. You carry that with you forever. It wasn't my fault, but hey, I had my name on the show, therefore it was my responsibility.
I'm not asking Noel Edmonds the brand about this, I'm asking Noel Edmonds this. After the Saturday night television ends, as it does for every Saturday night TV presenter, what's it like when you're out in the wilderness for a while?
Well, I wasn't out in the wilderness.
You are in terms of television fame.
Well, but you see, I liked the way you picked me up on the notion of the brand. I've only ever seen being on television as a job. Now, I've thoroughly enjoyed it, but when I went home and had whatever ego I've got pricked by the real people, my family and friends, I'm a different Noel Edmonds. And unless you've got my phone number, you don't know the real me. But I had my businesses at that time, and I'd always said that by the time I was 50, I was going to leave television. I've never, ever seen being on television as the most important thing in life, and I certainly don't think it is now.
So you're saying to me that when you were at home, you it didn't have any impact on you?
No. There was one tabloid newspaper who tried to give the impression that once my days at the BBC were over, I was sort of sitting at home in a darkened room with a telephone, sort of praying that it would ring and that I'd be taken back to Saturday nights. I had absolutely no ambition to do that. And I was very happy with the Unique Group and the businesses we were developing. I was working in television, but not in front of the camera. We had a very successful production company. We were producing things like the British Comedy Awards for ITV and doing shows for the BBC. So I was still involved in television and radio. Unique Broadcasting was one of the most successful independent production companies there's ever been. And we had an artists agency representing famous people and then other businesses. And I was very, very happy. And I did a bit of farming. I thoroughly enjoyed my farming down in Devon. So I was a very, very happy bunny, and I hadn't missed anything. And I feel in the same way now. You know, 50 years in September, Deal was the most wonderful show to present for 10 years. Do I want to walk back into a television studio? Only if somebody came up with something very different and highly original.
You talk about the Unique Group as one of the most successful production companies ever, and of course you lost that. Can we talk through how that happened? Because my God, what a story that is.
Well, yes, and with all possible respect to you and the BBC, I have to choose my words carefully as a responsible broadcaster, because I don't want your legal people thinking, oh, why did he say this and do that? Everything I'm now going to say in response to that question is factually accurate. Almost a year ago to the day, I found out why my businesses went into administration. I had always assumed...
So let's get the context first of all. So the Unique Group was a huge company making a lot of money, very successful, right?
Yes, we had not massive profits, I'm very happy to admit that, but we had a very big turnover. We had 70 staff. We had offices up there in Manchester. We had offices, two sets of offices in London. We had a design company. We were designing products for some of the biggest companies. And we had offices also down in Devon. And all of this suddenly imploded. And what I was about to say, Stephen, was that, you know, for 10 years, I thought it was me. I thought, actually, I must have been a rubbish businessman. But almost to the day, a year ago, five people went to prison, two of whom worked for the bank that destroyed my business. And one of whom, Mark Dobson, who's now in Wandsworth Prison for 4.5 years, he actually was my bank manager. And that's what destroyed my businesses. It had a massive impact upon my personal life. And as I was very prepared to say earlier last year, it took me to a dark place where I attempted to take my life.
How much money did you lose?
The very well-respected accountancy business, their forensic accountants, Menzies, everyone uses them in litigation because they're independent and they know their stuff, have valued my loss at between 60 and 70 million pounds. So it's been a horrific period. When all this kicked off, I thought I was opening a can of worms, and people warned me that I was taking on very powerful people. What I didn't realise was that I would learn about the systemic corruption in UK banking. It has been a massive eye-opener. I mean, over the last year, I've learnt stuff that will make your toes curl and make you very frightened about the future of Britain.
And you were left at the end. I'm trying to understand, were you left, because I don't know, were you then left as a result of this, having lost your fortune, or did you have another start? Did it matter financially? Had you enough money?
Oh, it had an absolutely devastating effect on my my money, my family's well-being. And ironically, I mean, this is one of the things that happens to Noel Edmonds, I was saved by a banker in 2005 when Deal or No Deal came along. And to give you an idea, the mental space I was in, I actually declined Deal or No Deal 3 times. I'd moved to France, to the south of France. I tried to start a new life. And I turned it down, but then...
Why did you get out of here? Was that you were starting a new life because you couldn't cope with this one, or what?
No, I'd always wanted to live in better weather, and I felt the need to just get away and meet new people and have a fresh approach. My marriage had failed. The businesses had gone into administration. It was just a horrendous period, and I thought, right, I'm going to try and do something a bit different. And I've always been like that, you know. There's no point in wallowing in it. I don't look in the past. That's why this whole thing's been a bit of a surprise, that it suddenly landed in my lap.
Well, during that horrendous period, could you get up in the morning? Could you function?
Yes. I was probably... when it led up to the point at which I tried to take my life, undoubtedly I was drinking too much. I mean, not to the point of being unable to do anything, but, you know, settling down and drinking a bottle of red wine in the evening to apparently help me to sleep. I like wine. It was a very, very dark space, and I've now got...
And what were you thinking in your head?
Well, I was gradually moving towards a point where there was no future for me as a human being.
How were you calculating that? I think this is interesting for others who feel there's no sense of hope, that here we have the man who we've seen over decades smiling, successful.
Yes. Well, right.
Happy.
Okay. Now, so, I can help people, and thank you for bringing this subject up, because I thought long and hard last year about, you know, do I come clean about this particular period of my life? And I felt that because of what I'm going through with Lloyds Bank, that it was possibly of help to other people to understand that somebody who maybe from the outside appeared to have everything was actually going to a very dark space. And prior to all of this happening to me at the beginning of this millennia, I'd always rather thought that people who took their lives were somewhat selfish. You know, how can you throw away the life that's been given to you? But believe me, unless you've ever been in that dark space where there is no logic, there is no reason, you cannot appreciate that it's just a one-way journey.
Which is why I'm trying to get you to bring us into that. What were you calculating in your mind? Because you knew that you could create things. You knew that you were talented.
You
so why did you
Steve,
think it was
it,
over?
I pride myself on being a reasonable communicator, and unless you've actually been in that space, you don't understand that all of the things that we take, and thankfully now I take as part of life, which is logic and reason and working things out, it doesn't exist. It that form of mental ill health does not have any of the handholds. It does not have any of the definitions. It doesn't have any of the structure of healthy living.
So were you humiliated? Did you see yourself as a failure?
Oh, I saw myself as a total failure. Of course I was a failure. My businesses had failed. My marriage had failed. I'd let people down. I had no self-esteem and no self-worth. And when those things come together, there appears to be only one route. And that one route is to terminate your life.
And what would you do each day during that period?
Funny thing is, I have no recollection of that period at all. There's about 3 or 4 days missing. The next recollection was being in a car with my friend Brian Cameron, taking me to the Priory in Bristol, from where I'm talking to you now. Not the Priory, but Bristol. And there's a huge chunk that's missing. And as I publicly said, I owe my life to some Devon ambulance paramedics and to the RD&E in Exeter. If it hadn't been for them, I would have succeeded.
So we will have more with Noel Edmonds after the news and sport. You heard him talking about his efforts to recover compensation he believes is owed to him after that fraud case. We should also say that a spokesperson for Lloyds has told us Lloyds Banking Group made determined efforts to reach a consensual resolution with Mr. Edmonds through mediation late last year, but this was not possible. As a formal litigation process has begun, it would be inappropriate to comment other than to say his claim will be contested. And if you have been affected by anything Noel said so far, you can contact the Samaritans 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, by calling 116 123 from anywhere in the UK. We'll pause there. Back more of our with our interview with Noel Edmonds after the news at 29 minutes past 11.
On digital, online, smartphone and tablet, this is BBC Five Live.
And with the headlines on Five Live, this is David Harper. Police in the West Midlands are questioning a man on suspicion of murder after...
Before that, time for the second half of our extended interview tonight with the broadcaster Noel Edmonds. Before the news and sport, he was telling us about the lowest point of his life when he attempted to take his own life. I had to ask the inevitable question about the impact that had on his loved ones. When you decided to take your life, what about the hurt that you would inflict on others by doing that? Those people who loved you and cared about you.
This is where we will both struggle with this one. Because you don't think that way. I have been helping people over many years now with this issue. Because they agreed, I went public, that I was funding the Samaritans down in the Southwest for many years. I channeled some of my money from Deal or No Deal into their offices because I knew how good their work was. And I have probably five people at the moment who I talk to regularly, who I've never met, and they are no longer complete strangers. They approached me because they said, I feel the same way. I mean, one woman who I referred to as Leslie from Somerset, we talk and text sort of every few days or so, and she was going to kill herself and sent me an email to that effect, and I got on to her, and... thankfully, I think, managed to help her to move to a more positive space. I struggle for an analogy, but it's mental quicksand, and you need to be pulled back to the rocks.
But Noel, when you were storing the tablets, etc., you know, it must have been somewhere in your mind, for those people who love me, this is pain like they will never have felt before.
Yeah, you are trying, and I understand, you are trying to impose logic on a situation that has no reason and no logic. You know, it makes no sense to take your own life. It doesn't make sense until you feel there is no hope. And when you feel hopeless, you have no life. I don't know another way to describe it, because of course now I'm fit and healthy and blissfully happy with Liz, and I have a wonderful family and friends around me. I agree, it seems absolutely barking mad.
Did you have anybody around you? Did you have many people around you at that stage who did love you?
Yes, I did. And I had, I mean, once I survived it, I found out who my friends were. You know, your friends are the ones who walk in through the door while everyone else is walking out. But I've never done friendship by volume, and I'm very fortunate that I do friendship by quality. And people help me, and they helped me through that dark period in 2005. And by 2006, when I met the wonderful Liz, I was back and I was thumping and enjoying life again. But it's, I tell you, it's a shocking place to go to. Not a lot of people come back from it.
How does it change you?
It's made me appreciate life more. It's made me appreciate friendship. I don't have anything to do with negative people. I'm an incredibly positive person. I've researched positive energy, and by that I mean scientifically researched it. I've even got a science company now.
Now, what's positive energy?
Positive energy, well, okay, we are energy beings. You think that you're skin and bone and flesh and blood, but actually all we are is trillions of cells, and those cells are made up of energy. And if you want to be healthy, you have to have positive energy. And when you're sick, you have negative energy. Everything on the planet vibrates, and you vibrate, and the table I'm leaning against vibrates. And health is actually when everything is vibrating really well for you. So I follow a regime, which I call the positivity formula, and I exercise in a certain way, I eat certain things. I love my wine still, but I recognise it's a negative energy, so you have to balance it with good water, positive water, a little bit of meditation, bit of
positive water.
Yeah, positive water.
What's the difference between positive water and the tap water I'm drinking?
The tap water you're drinking is actually very bad for you. Positive water is...
I'm sure Northern Ireland Water would have something to say about that and would dispute that.
Positive water is water that is as close to its natural form when it appears from a mountain or out of a spring. Unfortunately, water changes its form according to how we treat it. And if you're drinking water out of a tap in Manchester or London, that water has gone through pipes, it's gone through systems that has changed its components. And there's a fascinating guy called Dr. Emoto, no longer with us, and another guy, Gerard Pollack. And if you Google them, you will understand what I mean by positive water.
And you will understand, you know this, I'm sure you don't care, but you know that some people listening to this are saying to themselves, this is crazy. Like, this is crackpot stuff, that tap pot water is bad for you.
Hmm.
And that you're trying to align yourself with vibrations around the earth.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I haven't got a problem with sheeple saying that I'm crazy. That's fine. What's sane? What is crazy? You know, One of my biggest disappointments about the society we've created in Britain is that we stopped being curious. It's probably fueled by social media, where people just pass an opinion and think they've solved a problem. We are cursed by uninformed opinion. So I'm telling you that water's got a memory. I'm telling you there are scientists who will tell you that there are four elements to water. I'm telling you that nobody really believes what water is. We don't really know.
Water's got a memory.
Yeah, water can communicate. Now, all of these things are scientifically proven.
Who's it communicating with?
It's communicating with us, it's communicating with other water, it's communicating with everything around it.
You think water is talking to us?
No.
So what, communicating in what way?
Energy. Everything's about energy. You know, I find it extraordinary that more people aren't curious about energy, the energy around them. You know, all we are is energy. When I said a couple of years ago, there is no such thing as death, what I said was actually there's a departure. And that is a scientific fact. You know, read James L. Oshman, fantastic guy, absolutely brilliant scientist. And this man has dedicated his life to understanding the human body energy system.
So if there's no such thing as death and it's a departure...
Yeah, well,
where we
are is energy. Right, where's that energy go at the point that somebody signs a death certificate? Where's it gone?
You tell me.
No, you tell me.
Well, I'm not sure.
Well, you're full of energy, right? Trillions of cells, energetic cells, vibrating hopefully healthily. That is what sustains you. What happens? Where does that energy go? You cannot destroy energy. You cannot create it. You can only change its form. Fact. Where does it go?
Do you believe in a soul?
Where does it go? It's a reasonable question, Stephen.
I don't know.
Well, be curious and find out. It is a fact that at the point of departure, as I call it, the human body weighs less than when we are living. You know, words, we need words so we can communicate. They're our greatest gift, but they're also our greatest curse. And so death feels so final and so cruel and horrible, but departure is actually scientifically accurate. And that energy has to go somewhere. And I'm trying to do is find out where it goes. And the people at CERN are trying to find out where it goes.
Yeah. Of course, we're not just energy, are we? We're all individuals and our soul is unique to each of
so
us.
So what's the soul?
Where do you think our soul goes?
Well, what's the soul?
Stop asking the questions.
No, because You use the crazy word, but I'm not crazy. I'm curious. What is the soul? What is the human spirit? What is it? What do you think it is?
I think it's a... I think our soul is our individuality.
As you know, that's rubbish. That is not an answer to the question.
Do you believe in an afterlife?
I believe in life. I believe in reincarnation. I believe, as Einstein did, that there is an energy matrix which encapsulates everything in the universe, whatever that is, and we don't know what that is. And I believe that this energy has an intelligence and communicates at incomprehensible speed. And I believe that at CERN, the quantum physicists have discovered that energy. And I actually think they are very close to discovering what Einstein called the invisible piper. Now, whether that's God or whether it's something else, I haven't got a clue. But I'm fascinated by the way science is going.
You haven't got a clue, but you must have a view.
Well, I have
so
a view.
Do you believe in God?
I don't believe in God as other people describe God. I believe in a higher energy force. I don't think everything around us has happened by accident. I believe there's a creator, a manager and an organizer, but I've got no idea what it is.
And when you say you believe in reincarnation, so do you believe on after your death that...
Departure.
Yes, but reincarnated as what?
Well, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea.
Could it be as another person?
I think that's a strong argument, but I have no idea where that energy goes. Think of it as a web. Think of it as a beautiful, silky energy web. I have no idea. I'm not intelligent enough, bright enough to be able to answer these questions. And actually, do you know what? I don't think there's a scientist who's lived or is living, who gets it, who's found it yet. But I'm really excited. I think we are very nearly there. I am fascinated by quantum physics. I'm fascinated by Niels Bohr. I'm fascinated by Max Planck. These people seem to understand something that we've kind of forgotten about.
My goodness, television seems so trivial compared to this conversation, doesn't it? But I don't want to do this interview and end it without talking about deal or no deal. You said no the first time it was offered to you, you turned it down.
Yeah.
How did they get you to do it then?
I have a wonderful agent called John Miles, who's been a close friend for a very long time, and he called me at my home in France, and he said, look, Peter Bazalgette, he runs Endemol, he really wants you to do it. Channel 4 want you to do it, and do you think that you'd come to London and explain to them? Because he said, I can't explain to them why you don't want to do it. So I flew to London, went to Shepherd's Bush, and they said, why don't you play the game? And so we played the game in a room, and I got it, and I saw it, and I said, can I change it a bit? And they, what do you mean? It's a format. It's been very successful in other countries. I said, I want to make it a people show. It's not about the boxes. Yeah, the boxes have got the money. But if this is going to be successful, the audience has to feel for the people playing the game. And I will claim that as my suggestion, that we then interpreted it that way. And 3,000 games later and 10 years, it was an enduring success because we focused upon the participants, not so much the money.
One of the only game quiz shows I know where they're not asking questions.
Well, of course, it wasn't a quiz show.
Yeah.
I mean, it actually was the most extraordinarily simple format. Absolutely brilliant and a privilege to present because I got to meet some amazing people. But, Stephen, what is the soul? Why am I allowed to let you get away with this? Because I'm not Wacky Edmonds. I'm just really curious.
You see, I haven't suggested you are.
Well, you did use the crazy word.
I said that some people, well, you know it to be true, that some people listening to this, when you go into this type of stuff, they'll say he's lost the plot. You know that. Of course you know that, because you're not, you've said yourself.
Yes, and I don't give a toss about him, but what you're doing, you're doing a very neat little swerve here. I'm allowed to have some fun with this as well. You're doing a neat little swerve away from things that are based on fact.
Look, I'm finding it difficult to I find it difficult to find my own place in life, all right? I don't know.
You need help. I can help.
Well, we all do, don't we? We all do. Well,
I can help you. Stephen, I'll give you my phone number.
But what
we need to meet and talk.
What is the soul?
I tell you what,
I would have a difficult time enjoying life if I didn't think we all had a soul. That's how I would answer that. I got to believe that we're more than just energy. And when you say that's all we are, well, that's pretty depressing if that's
all we are.
What about love and
that's part of the energy
and
that's part of the that's exactly the point.
When I hug my mother, I don't think she's just a bundle of energy.
Well, you should do, because you would appreciate her more, and you're transferring energy, because the two of you are entwined anyway in this crazy energy matrix that is all of us and life. It's the Earth, it's the universe. We're all in this energy soup. But let me just say one thing to you, which you might find an enduring positive. Are you aware that feelings come before thoughts, before actions?
Well, I am now, if you're saying they do.
Well, I mean, it's logic, isn't it? If you think about it, you want to have a pee, so you feel like you want to have a pee. You think, oh, I want to have a pee, and then you go to the loo. Or you think, oh, I'm hungry. So you have a feeling of hunger. You think, oh, I'm hungry, and then you do something about it. The moment you accept the fact that feelings... And we talk about gut instinct, remember. Feelings come before thoughts, before actions. It changes your life completely. Because then, when you wake up in the morning and you have a thought, you think of someone, you think of an action, what was the feeling that came first? That's part of the energy. So when you think of someone first thing in the morning, chances are the energy has come from that someone or a situation. It's just, it's logic. It's just the most bleeding obvious thing. Feelings come before thoughts, before actions.
So you think, that doesn't necessarily follow, does it? Because, you know, when I was driving into work tonight, I was thinking about you.
Yeah, but maybe
you weren't communicating with me directly. I was thinking about you.
How do you know that? I don't know, but how does anyone know that?
Well, but I know that because I was thinking about you, because it was in my diary that I was about to interview you. It was not a direct communication, telepathically or whatever it is, between you and I, was it?
Well, if you follow the science of it, and please read James L. Oshman, fascinating guy, actually... You were picking up, your energy field was picking up on something else in the broader energy field. Now, we call it telepathy, you call it, you know, psycho this, that and the other, but it is just a fact. How do trees communicate with another tree 50 miles away? How is that possible?
And you think they do?
Well, it is known that they do.
The trees talk to each other?
Yes, if you want to use the word talk, they communicate with each other.
I didn't know that.
There's a very, very well-known bush in Zimbabwe, which the giraffe like to eat. And when they nibble away at one bush, that bush turns itself toxic because it's being invaded, assaulted. And that message is sent to all the other bushes in the area. And the giraffe can't have a feast on the rest of them. How the hell does it do that?
I have no idea.
Have you seen? I mean, these are well known scientific experiments where the American military did this, where there was a guy put in a room. He was a volunteer. He was put in a room, and they took some blood from him, and they took that blood down the corridor, and they had a device which allowed them to measure his blood reaction, his blood energy responses to emotions, and they showed him videos. And they showed him the full gamut of videos, from sexual videos to violence, etc. And they measured what went on in the lab. Down the corridor, a file of blood behaved in exactly the same way. And in the end, they managed to get the distance between the two samples of blood to over 1,000 miles. And the people at the other lab were able to say what the guy was watching by the blood that reacted. Now, how the hell does that work?
Just a couple more questions. My goodness, I find you interesting.
I'm only encouraging people to be curious. Do you know, and I'm sorry, but I have to make this point. There are three great tragedies about British society now. One, the loss of tolerance and compassion. Secondly, the fact that we don't have informed opinion. But thirdly, where's our curiosity gone? Why do people just say, oh, I don't get that? Well, a tree can do that. A tree, you know.
Well, you're mocking me.
Well, no, I just think it's a tragedy that a nation that was so curious that it dominated a third of the planet, for good and also for bad, of course, seems to have lost its curiosity. Why don't we find out about these things? We could solve lots of health problems. We could make people happier.
Well, a couple more questions and we're done.
Why? Why should you say I'm done? Now, did you feel we're done?
Leave me alone.
Did you leave me alone? Did you feel we're done?
Maybe you were transferring this in the energetic atmosphere. I don't know.
You're regretting inviting me to do this.
I'm not regretting it at all. So whatever energy you're finding that's negative, it's not right. I'm actually enjoying this. I've told the producer I want to keep going. What was it like to find love again?
Well, you see, you're just not going to like this one at all. So there I am. It's 6 minutes past 11 on a morning on October the 6th, 2006. I'm about to change for the second Deal or No Deal of the day. And I was aware of the presence of someone in the room. And I turned around and Liz was there. She was being introduced by a colleague. And the introduction was because she was going to do my makeup for 3 days. She ran the department for Endemol and she'd never wanted to work on Deal, but she was helping out. And I just turned around and I thought, oh, there you are. And fortunately for me, it was a pretty similar reaction. And it is a love like nothing I know. But what is love? We are soulmates. We are now a single energy.
Is it difficult to find love again if you have been married before? And do you always compare your new lover to your past one?
No, of course not. No, well, I don't know what other people do, but I certainly don't. I don't look backwards, Stephen. And I wasn't looking for love, and Liz wasn't looking for love. But when we met, it was the most incredible collision of two energies, which have become stronger by their combination. And it's a wonderful, wonderful space to be in. I was so fortunate to have found such a profound love and a partner who excites and stimulates me every single day with her knowledge and her care, and we have such a harmonic relationship.
It's who wonderful. Rules the roast?
Neither, because we are one.
And you're going on a classic car road trip.
I'm back on the Beeb.
Yeah.
You'll be able to see me on Sunday nights on BBC Two, thrashing a classic car around Southeast Asia with my beautiful wife, yes, who's a great driver and thankfully a brilliant mechanic, because I'm not, and it'll probably break down.
You see, I can't, this is so not non-BBC on the BBC, promo for BBC Two show the way you shouldn't do it. I can't think of anything worse than being with someone I love in a beautiful country or an interesting country, and a camera crew with me, and the takes and the take twos and the different angles and the sound man there and all of that. Did you genuinely enjoy it?
Well, I haven't done it yet. We leave next week. I'll tell you when I get back.
Sorry, I thought you'd already done this.
No. No, not at all. But hey, I wouldn't have said I was going to do it unless I thought that actually the way the BBC will present it will be brilliant. And it's going to be a huge amount of fun. I'm looking forward to going to a place that I've never visited. I want to learn about the culture. I want to find out about the people. I want to understand how that part of the world has developed. And at the same time, I'm going to drive a British made, apparently, I don't know what the car is, they won't tell me, a British made pre-1977 classic car. Well, we all know what the British motor industry was like pre-77, so it'll only last 2 days and then we'll all go to the hotel.
Okay. Is it nice to be back?
Well, I am thrilled this will be broadcast on BBC Two. Absolutely thrilled. And the production company are great. I don't think I'm back on the BBC as such, but I've been on the BBC quite a few times over the last few years. And, yeah, it's going to be fun. It's just going to be really, really good. And I want to visit a temple and find out what the soul is.
Try to answer this in one sentence for me, because this is the last question. What does life mean to you, Noel Edmonds? And I'm not asking the brand.
Being grateful every day, because that attracts even more opportunities, and assisting others on my journey.
Well, nice to talk to you tonight. Thank you so much, sir.
Stephen, thank you.
Well, quite a lot of reaction to that tonight. You can let us know what you think. Here's our number. There's quite a lot in that as well, wasn't there? Love and an attempt at suicide, finding love again, the loss of his fortune, him talking about himself as a brand, this whole concept of how energy talks to each other and trees and water can communicate with each other. There's some people saying on Twitter that was an extraordinary insight into a broadcaster who many of us have grown up with. Here's the number tonight, 08085 909 693. 08085 909 693. The paper review is coming next. We'll have a look at Saturday's front pages with Rita Say Mitchell.